Hi, thank you for joining us for the Rethink podcast. My name is David, and I'm the editor of Think Magazine.
And I'm Nika, researcher and project manager at the University of Malta and a writer for Think Magazine. The United Nations quotes the year 2050 as a point when we, as a severely intertwined global community, need to have our act together in relation to food production as the projected population of 9 billion people draws nearer. The way we're burning through resources has pushed individuals, social media influencers, and communities to adopt and promote veganism. Vegan diets, featuring everything from fresh tropical fruit platters to veganized chicken fingers, have exploded in popularity in recent years. Though vegan diets are commended for offering a plethora of health benefits, their impact on animal protection and preserving environmental resources proved to be leading reasons for many who choose to go vegan. In fact, over 73% of those who go vegan indicate that animal protection is one of the major reasons for this dietary lifestyle change. Environmental sustainability, as it relates to food production, is a very real, pressing issue. However, vegan diets and foods are often not accessible or accepted by all individuals. How might we generate a culture which is not only more welcoming of vegan habits, but also able to access such foods? Dr. Suzanne Piscopo was the former head and associate professor of the Department for Health, Physical Education, and Consumer Studies. She has written healthier lifestyle-related stories for children, researched the relation between the Mediterranean diet and health, and is both a registered nutritionist and a European health promotion practitioner. Welcome, Dr. Suzanne Piscopo.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
I was wondering if you could tell me some of the most important lessons you have learned through past experiences and during your career.
Whoa, okay. Now you've started off with a really onerous question there. Of course, yes. I mean, I was listening to your introduction and you really sort of hit the nail on the head with regards to why people in general tend to go for a plant-based diet. What lessons have I learned? Let me focus on that in relation to that. As you realize, I use the word plant-based diet. I think when people, and here I'm generalizing a bit, but there tends to be this kind of feel that when people hear the word veganism, they tend to associate it with the, I'm going to be a bit blunt here, a group of like militant people nearly sometimes, in the sense that, you know, they're all out, you know, against those people who actually do consume meat and sort of they have this certain attitude towards people who, like them, don't just consume plants.
There's like a self-righteousness.
Yes, that kind of thing. And so I, first of all, tend to say, let's move towards a plant-based diet. And I think that's a bit more acceptable. And of course, being from Malta, with the whole, you know, interest, renewed interest in Mediterranean diet, kind of if you use that as your springboard, like, you know, let's go for a Mediterranean diet, which is mainly a plant-based diet with some, okay, fish and chicken, etc. So I think choice of words, let's start off on that, is lesson number one, how you approach this. So if you're going to emphasize more plants in your diet, maybe the word veganism just comes in later on in the discussion. And then, of course, yes, people are extremely interested in their health. There's a big move now. Yes, we need to be more responsible for our well-being. And people are aware that diet has a huge role to play there, and that plants, whatever, whether we're talking about cereals, whether we're talking about vegetables, whether we're talking about fruits, pulses, can definitely contribute towards making your diet healthier. Then, of course, as you rightly mentioned in the introduction, there's the whole issue of environment. And what's good for you is also good for the planet. And that's kind of become a mantra now, you know, eat for your own health, but eat for the planetary health as well. And people, again, are realizing that the more plant-based you are, the less detriment or the less negative impact you're going to have on the planet. So I guess showing that you're a responsible citizen, both taking care of your own health, but also taking care of planetary health, is another lesson which I think I've learned that can be used with a larger number of people. And I might just add one little thing here, with young people, especially with children. Children at, you know, we're talking primary level, are very open to this idea that I'm doing something for my own good, but even more so for the good of the planet, and such as animal welfare, for example, or to have a nice green environment. And this also holds for Malta now. There's lots happening in schools around that.
I love that. So very positive mentality around this shift that we're seeing. And also what you said about young people, that reminds me, I actually have a friend whose niece, she's only 6 years old and is talking about how she wants to be vegetarian. So that kind of awareness at such a young age, already questioning, what am I eating? Why am I eating it? It's amazing to see.
Shall we go into a bit and clarify what defines veganism, the difference between vegetarianism and pescatarianisms and flexitarianism, all these isms?
Yes. Okay, no, I mean, basically, when you're looking at veganism, I guess that's the kind of end of the continuum, if you want to say that. And there, a person is definitely not going to have any food which has any kind of animal relation. So whether it's the food itself or something derived from that food. Whereas vegetarianism, you have this kind of leeway or allowance to also include dairy products. So in the sense that you have not harmed the animal by, extracting, if you want to say that, let's say milk from the cow. Although some might argue that even how that is done could cause some suffering. Or, for example, you know, if you have eggs, okay, from hens, whatever, there again, Technically, the hen has not been harmed. So there you have this allowance of dairy for the vegetarians. Then with the pescatarians, as possibly you can deduct from the name itself, there's the allowance of fish. So seafood, etc., is allowed there as well. So that's the diet there would be more varied. It would be perhaps easier for people also to choose what to eat and have a variety of meals. Though I'll come back to that later as well, because I don't want to imply in any way that being a vegan or a vegetarian means a dull, mundane diet. Not at all.
I can attest to that.
Yes. And of course, there's this whole flexitarianism kind of thing, which is really, you are allowed, if you want to say that, you can consume some meat, but so you shift between, you know, having some meals with meat, but also meals which are mainly plant-based, etc. But people still tend to be cautious with regards to meat consumption and tend to have a lower meat consumption when it comes to this sort of flexitarianism. I mean, I'd just like to add straight away, also putting on my nutritionist hat here, that the World Health Organization basically is recommending not more than 2 portions of red meat a week. So even, you know, the WHO itself is not saying, like, become a vegan or a vegetarian, but it's definitely promoting and recommending a low red meat diet. And that is mainly from the health perspective on their part, of course, because it's been recognized that having a high meat consumption often tends to be a high fat diet, and there's other substances in the meat which increase the risk, I'm not saying lead to, but increase the risk potentially for certain cancers, for example.
So basically, red meat is effectively what could be seen as a carcinogen, right?
We have to be a bit careful not to be so blunt in the sense that, but there is the risk. Yes, I guess, you know, you can say that it does increase the risk for cancer, particularly
excess.
How it's been processed as well. Okay, you can have raw red meat, but particularly processed red meat. So things like sausages, salamis, all those deli meats, we call them.
Okay.
Often they will have had certain substances added, nitrites and nitrates, to preserve the red color. Because when you process the meat, it tends to become beige and really ugly looking.
and
off-white, and people want meat to be red or, you know, that kind of tinge.
Well, all our food, we want it to look pretty, and that has its own implications.
Yeah, so as soon as you process meat, you have to add something back to, or, you know, put something there to retain that color. And that is a potential, let's say, carcinogen, if you want to say that, the nitrates and nitrates, etc.
Okay. I mean, in large doses, potentially, it might be a carcinogen.
Yes, yes. No, it's true. It's there. The fact is there. You know, with regards to diet, there's so much to say with regards to, you know, having a plant-based diet. People will immediately associate plants with vitamins and minerals, and rightly so, with fiber, which is, I mean, these are all good things to help in your diet, to help protect you from diseases, to help your digestive system work well. But then, of course, now, I mean, we've been hearing about these for about a decade or so now, there's also what we call the antioxidants. So these are substances which are found in plants. Just to take it one step a little bit deeper, we actually call these phytochemicals as well, so phyto from plants and chemicals. And these help to reduce the risk for heart disease, reduce the risk for cancer. They do that by protecting against inflammation in the body, and inflammation is one thing which can lead to cancer, which can lead to heart disease. What are these phytochemicals? It's very simple. The colouring, if you want to say that, in the different fruits and vegetables. So that's why we always say eat a variety of vegetables and fruit different colored. Eat your rainbow, we say to kids. Eat your rainbow. Because if you're having yellows, greens, white, oranges, reds, purples, all of those are different phytochemicals. And they have like a different role in the body, but basically all leading to the same thing, protection. So it's something which we really need to emphasize.
Protection from what, sorry?
Yes, well, in the plants themselves, they're actually protection in the sense against pests and things like that. Mm-hmm. But in our bodies, as I said, these phytochemicals really help. So that's why I mentioned antioxidants. They are substances which help prevent oxidization, which is something which can lead to inflammation in the body. And inflammation is the first step to diseases such as cancer. When you have inflammation, there may be a greater turnover of cells, and so for the body to repair. Okay, now when the body is repairing itself, normally there's no problem. It takes its time, it repairs itself. But when there's inflammation, there's a rapid turnover of old cells and new cells. And that's where the body may make a mistake. And that's where we have what we call like mistakes in our DNA, etc. So that's where you increase your risk for cancer. Just to give you an analogy, if you're cooking a recipe and you have, you know, all the time in the world, you can take it easily, you probably won't make a mistake. But if you have 10 minutes to prepare this recipe, you're putting in all the ingredients, then you might make a mistake. And that's what the body can do when it needs to repair itself fast. And that can happen when there is inflammation, for example.
I see. So it's the variety of foods that you eat. It's not necessarily like, oh, just eating, I don't know, carrots every day. It might be plant-based, but it's definitely not healthy.
You really need to eat a variety. A variety, because it's going to give you so many different vitamins, minerals, these phytochemicals. But also, to link back to what even, you know, I was saying earlier in the introduction, when you're eating the variety of plants, apart from all the goodness, you know, with respect to your own health, it's extremely good for the environment. Because we need that biodiversity. We need the biodiversity not only to have the biodiversity and have this richness of flora, but the soil is kept healthier, for example. The greater the variety of plants which you have, some need a lot of water, some don't need a lot of water. Okay, some will help to fix nitrogen in the soil, such as the legumes, for example, the beans. They help to keep nitrogen in the soil in a natural way, rather than adding our fertilizers and, you mm-hmm. know, all the nitrites and nitrates, which I mentioned earlier, are sometimes even added to food. So yes, I mean, Nika, I'm sure you can add to that as well from your own.
It's really music to my ears. Yeah, as a conservationist, biodiversity is the core of what you're trying to do, preserve mm-hmm. it. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. But coming back to the idea of helping myself is also helping the planet. So diversity in your diet is also mimicking what it means to have a healthy planet. That's we it. Need the biodiversity for ourselves as individuals mm-hmm. and also as a global human population. And having diversity internally is I think just it's connected basically in both directly and indirectly with having the diversity expressed in agriculture and then in the wild too. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, there's so much to that in the sense, again, not only our own personal health, but and also the sort of planetary health and all the ecosystems which will help, you know, which we will help to preserve and maintain. But also things like, let's go even say culturally, you know, why? I mean, it's such a shame when you hear of like different ingredients which are, you know, foods which are no longer being grown,
yes,
for example. They've been lost. Indigenous things, you know, indigenous crops and foods. And then the recipes associated with that. And then the rituals at home associated with that. So from something agriculture, it becomes something social culturally. Because once you lose a food, you lose a recipe, you lose part of your culture.
Yeah.
I mean, at certain points, we tend to go towards food that is easier to produce rather than food that is, say, I mean, I'm going to be honest, I love the Mediterranean diet. I think it's fantastic. Tomatoes, eggplants, fish. I think it's a wonderful diet. But unfortunately, it seems that it's easier to go for a more globalized diet, if that makes sense.
More westernized, maybe.
More westernized diet,
yes.
Maybe, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a shame, because we have such a wonderful heritage when it comes to, like, the Mediterranean diet, I'm saying. That it's a shame when we like substitute it for, not that trying another diet isn't something good, but I think it's a shame. I think we're missing out on it.
Yes, and no, it's definitely a shame. As I said, I mean, going back to WHO, World Cancer Research Fund, they are all promoting the Mediterranean diet, the true authentic Mediterranean diet. We say the Mediterranean diet, there's this triad. It's basically a diet based on cereals. Mainly you have your wheat and your barley, mm-hmm. and then you have your olives and olive oil, and you have wine as well, the grape.
Oh, okay. So the wine is part of the
yes,
diet.
Yes, it's part of the
then
diet.
Now I like it even.
In moderate amounts.
In moderate amounts, okay, yes, no, definitely. But, I mean, you have that tried, but then, of course, you have all the other things as well. I mean, you even have, to be honest, you have dairy as well. You have your yogurts, etc. But in a sense, what I wanted to say was, because you also mentioned something which we hear a lot, and maybe that is a lesson, a negative lesson, which in a way I learned over the years, Nika, you mentioned lessons earlier. People tend to say that to eat healthy, you need a lot of time or you need a lot of money. But let's pick up on time first. In reality, it's perhaps because people haven't embraced certain shortcuts which you can do. So, for example, okay, so let's say you go off on a Saturday. Let's use Saturday as the day when you go and, let's say, do your vegetable and fruit uh-huh. and whatever shopping. The thing is, you need to build a certain routine in your life. Say, okay, I've gone shopping. Now, when I go home, rather than just like dump everything in the fridge or whatever, let me just take that half hour and do what we call prepping. Prepping basically means that you kind of prepare, let's say, you know, a stage one or two, if you want to say that, of your food. So if you've got your vegetables, you can wash them. If you need to peel them and put them and chop them up quickly and put them in bags. So when during the week you don't have time to, let's say, prepare a soup, all you need to do is take out your bag. Okay, it's already washed, chopped everything. Basically, put it in a pot, boil, put uh-huh. in your blender, and you've got a soup, for example. Like, you turn your meal making into 15, 20-minute things. But you need to prep a bit before by maybe washing, peeling, and chopping according to whatever the vegetable is, for example. Sometimes what happens as well is people tend to waste food, and we'll come to that as well a bit later, because they don't store their foods well. So know how to store your food, what goes in the fridge, what doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, that you need maybe certain things. You just need to put them in a brown bag and put them in the fridge and keep them dry. Certain things you might, you know,
you can leave them out, probably.
You can even leave them out, yes.
Make use of the freezer.
Or make use of the freezer. Yes, mm-hmm. definitely. So, you know, if you prep a few things, you can have shortcuts mm-hmm. and not spend so much time. And then things like, you know, I mean, really salads don't take so much time. You know, if you're preparing, let's say, some quinoa or barley or rice on the stove, and at the same time, then you're just chopping up a few vegetables. So one thing is cooking, 15 minutes and it's done, your quinoa or your rice. And then in the meantime, you've prepared your veg, put everything together and, you know, some olive oil and you're done. So I think we need to educate people more on shortcuts. I'm not blaming people. I'm just saying maybe their education hasn't helped them enough yet to know how to do these shortcuts. Or cook in bulk. Let's say you've made soup. cook a huge pot of soup, then freeze in portions what you have left. Just take out of the fridge when you get home at, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. By 8 o'clock, it's thawed out of the freezer. I mean, it's thawed and your soup is ready to warm up. So
even just to add on that, even for simply incorporating leftovers from dinner into a lunch for the next day. I mean, if you've had, I don't know, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything right now. I'm trying to think what I ate yesterday. So let's say you had, you know, you had a nice bit of chicken, for instance.
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's very easy to incorporate that into like a couscous salad the next day.
Excellent. Yes, definitely.
Yes, there. I think what you're talking about is repurposing. Mm-hmm. And you can also take a bit of a leftover. If you have just a bit of soup left, can you throw that into a new stew?
Yes. Or make a pasta sauce with it.
Yes.
I do that a lot, actually. We love like to make this marrow soup at home with, you know, the marrow zucchini, whatever. And, you know, if we make too much, then the next day we just cook up, you know, whole grain pasta. We use that as the base for our sauce. Maybe just add some other things like mushrooms to it, you know, and or chopped peppers. And you have your sauce from your leftover soup, basically. If you want to thicken it, these are the little tricks we need to teach. You actually add a potato. Potato helps to thicken.
So the starch.
That's it.
So do you think that maybe one of the reasons why we're, you know, people in general, we tend to avoid like either the shortcuts or what? Do you think maybe the problem is that we want to have fresh food? We want to have something that's like fresh and ready made. Like, we don't like eating the same food. We're a bit picky, I'm trying to say, with food. Do you think that might be part of the problem?
Well, definitely. I'm just thinking of a friend of my husband who, you know, who would never eat the same thing like, you know, the next day. I remember him being quite adamant about that. But the reality is, it doesn't have to be the same thing. As you know, like I said, if you're repurposing, it can actually take a totally different shape, flavor, texture. So, and I mean, you know, flavor, we're talking about plant-based diets, all the herbs, all the spices, which you can add to something, which, you know, will change its flavor completely. So if you've had, let's say I mentioned this marrow soup, which we tend to make pretty, let's say, delicate. In the first round of it, it's a pretty delicate soup. But when you repurpose it, to use Nika's words, and make it into a pasta, you can give it that kick with some, like, you know, chili pepper if you want to, or something like that. So it's just changed its flavor completely. But you used it in a different, you know, you used it in a different way and it changed flavor. So I think it's these shortcuts and these, you know, tricks which we need to help people to sort of work with and make their diet as varied as possible in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm very interested what you said about are people picky, because what I'm finding is that we are not only losing the knowledge, and with the recipes we're losing a bit of that culture and history around what the food used to be like. But then I think we're becoming a bit complacent with what is available. Mm. I mean, we've lost so many different varietals. Let's give an example of apples. Mm-hmm. There used to be thousands. And I find it heartbreaking that we've lost so much of this. There's about 12 species of plants that we eat now. 12. And there used to be...
From a thousand.
Thousands.
Yes.
Yep. And there's a lot we can still discover, which is the upside of that. But what I'm thinking about is maybe we're not picky enough, in fact, right now, because we're very happy with pastitsi, with twisties in Malta, let's say. And people can't even recognize now, some people, I'm not saying everybody, don't know what an unripe olive looks like. I mean, so much of Malta has lost its olive trees. And what about the Maltese goat? I mean, we're drinking cow's milk now here, but not too long ago, there used to be farmers coming to your door with a goat and milking the goat on your doorstep, which I wish I could have witnessed.
But there was also a denir ir when you're milking the goat directly.
I guess that was solved. And now, I mean, nowadays, of course, there's much more regulation with regards to that. But no, I think what you're saying with regards to, you know, coming back to this plant-based diet and the whole approach of Mediterranean and everything, something as well, and I mentioned it earlier, and I think we should mention it, is the whole idea that of cost. People also think that to eat plant-based can actually be expensive. Mm-hmm. Let's put it this way. The reality is, when you look at statistics and inflation, etc., it's true that fruits and vegetables tend to be the food group which have generally a routine increase in price. That's mm-hmm. very true. But the plant-based diet isn't just made of fruits and vegetables. You definitely want to include some of those and the varieties we said. But again, here I'm going to emphasize the pulses, the seeds. Nuts tend to be expensive, but let's focus on the pulses. So we're looking at all the kinds of beans. We're looking at the chickpeas, okay, lentils. Those are amongst the cheapest and ultra cheapest foods you can buy, really. So people need to, again, and this links to the recipes which we've lost, they need to start knowing how to cook with those beans again. The easiest thing is to add them to salads, okay, mm-hmm. that's fine. But you can make so-called like meatloaves, beanloaves, if you want to say that. You can even be adventurous. And I'm seeing this in schools, which is really nice with parents, like making muffins from red kidney beans, for example, mm-hmm. or making, muffins from chickpeas and something else. So they would still be sweet because then you add things like applesauce or you add something like prunes or raisins and stuff like that. But, basing their muffins on beans, for example, and chickpeas. And so there's, or you can, coming back to sort of more maybe substantive meals, something like you can make, instead of like a meat-based curry, let's say a lentil or chickpea-based curry, for example. So people, again, need to be helped to learn how to cook more with these things. Now, some people might come up with a kind of complaint, if you want to say that, as many of these things need soaking, etc. But again, it's not so difficult. If you buy the dried varieties, you soak overnight. So you just before you go to bed, put them in a water, leave them to soak. Okay, you can leave them to soak even the whole next day till you come back from work. And then basically you would remove that water, put fresh water, and then cook them again. And you have your, really authentic, if you want to say that, beans with nothing added. If you need a shortcut, and I appreciate that some people need the shortcut, you can go for the canned variety. All you need to do is rinse well from the brine, from the salt sort of thing. And that's fine as well. So more use of beans, more use of beans. Luckily, we have some really good things in Malta, like we have our, couscous with fool, mm-hmm. for example. Yes, so that's nice, with ricotta and egg,
you had a nice little jbeina that the couscous would
That's
fall.
It, the jbeina, so perfect. And that's very traditional, of course. But yeah, there's so many things which you can do.
Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to hear the full version of this podcast, feel free to visit um.edu.mt/think. Our theme music is Kawaii Kitsun by Kevin McLeod, and the song in our music break was Eyeliner by Stenifer.